Hi, Smooches. You're listening to Make Out Already. In this episode, Liz and I got to talk with Ruth Hansen, who's the author of The Rail Walkers, which came out in 2021. She describes the book as a sapphic revenge western, which is now officially my favorite Venn diagram of romance plots. So we got to talk about her book, but we also talked about Our Flag Means Death, which is a period romantic comedy from HBO that started coming out in March. Ruth is an expert on everything Golden Age of piracy, so she really got to fill us in on a lot of backstory as we celebrated this amazing show that is a gay pirate show where the gay shit is not subtext, but text. I'm obsessed with it. We're all obsessed with it. Hopefully this episode will convince you to be obsessed with it too. Stay tuned.
Hi, Meg.
Hi, Liz.
We're here with, do you prefer, is your author name Ruth or Ruthie Hansen?
So I basically let people call me whatever the fuck they want so long as they give me money. But
yeah,
my professional like author screenwriter name is Ruth, but I typically go by Ruthie in day to day. So hello.
Okay. Hi, we are here with Ruthie, author Ruth Hansen, who wrote the sapphic Highway Woman.
It is a lesbian revenge western. I know that there are a million of those on the market, but
it was the first one that I had come across.
I read it all this week and I loved it. I was reading while I was at work a lot of the time. And I'm like really wanting to see it as a show.
That's the dream.
I just felt like the sort of like episodic quality of some of their contracts that they took would lend itself really well. Still the overarching narrative drawing us toward the end. It's so good.
Thank you. Oh my God, that makes me so happy. Do you know which contract was my favorite, by the way, just in general?
I mean, I know which one that I really enjoyed, which was, I think her name was Maddie.
Maddie's husband.
Yeah. He's the absolute shit kicked out of him.
I loved him. I went full Tyler Durden on him. I loved that scene so much. For those who are interested, my book, The Rail Walkers, is the story of a bunch of vigilante gunslingers out in the Wild West. And the main character, Violet, goes from a kind of sheltered, sort of very naive, good person, but still has a lot to learn. Mm-hmm. And she becomes a bare knuckle brawler and she kicks the shit out of like abusive assholes and sexual predators and all that kind of fun stuff. And the scene with a girl named Maddie, basically she comes to the gang because her husband won't stop abusing her, and so Violet was like, cool, I know what I'm gonna do for the afternoon, and she just kicks the shit out of him, and it was so cathartic and I loved it.
Yeah, it's what he deserves.
Yeah. And then she and her girlfriend make out in a bush.
As you do.
I'm just deeply in love with May. Like that has happened and ruined my life. And I just want to go to Madame Henny's little bone house and hang out with the gang. Just sounds amazing.
Thank you. Madam Hen is definitely my favorite like non-primary side character. Thank you so much, that means a lot to me. It was 5 years of my life, so.
Yeah, there were a couple of times during the week when I was like really tempted to email you and like try to extort a promise that like none of the Rail Walkers were gonna die, because I was so worried. But I was like, okay, I'm gonna just refrain because that's probably really inappropriate.
I mean, I would have responded and my response would have been, oh, sweet summer child. But
it was like the perfect fit with Our Flag Means Death in terms of like this sort of sense of adventure, this kind of like slow burn situation. Mm-hmm. And I mean, obviously they're both like different time periods, but
sure. It's, I mean, aspect. I have been obsessed with pirates in general almost my entire life. And there's a reason why we kind of have this, there's almost sort of a subconscious connection between gunslingers of the Wild West and pirates. And that's because both of these sort of genres are about people who, number one, operate outside the law, number mm-hmm. two, are morally questionable, and number three, they generally have to exist from a thematic point to sort of hold up a mirror to the world that they live in. Mm-hmm. For the iconography of a Western, there is what is called the good bad man, which mm-hmm. is like any John Wayne character. Mm-hmm. Someone who comes in from out of town. He is not part of the society. By the end of the film, you know, he's gone because he cannot fit in the real world. And with mm-hmm. pirates, like, that's the whole bag, baby. Like, mm-hmm. pirates are, and I'll get into this a little more when we talk about the historical aspects of it, but this is pre American Revolution. This is pre French Revolution. This is the first time, you know, because we have the after effects of colonialism and imperialism, and we have, you know, the world has become so much bigger in many, many ways. And so we have the old world, which is a great touchstone for that, the episode with Kristen Schaal in the mm-hmm. the wig and the fancy party. So we have the old world who wants nothing more than everything to stay as it was back when, you know, the people who were beneath them knew their place.
Right.
But then we have this international push for change, for the dissolving class barriers, for dissolving wealth barriers. And we have these people who basically fuck you. I'm going to get on a ship and I'm going to make my own wealth and I'm going to make my own name and I'm going to, you know, live my life how I see fit. And it's a really fascinating time in history. I think it's generally overlooked for many reasons, possibly because of how how pirates have been depicted throughout Hollywood and throughout romanticization and things like that. And now, and of course, you know, I love Pirates of the Caribbean, but the Disney-fied yassification of pirates definitely contributes to this this overarching idea that the Golden Age of piracy is sort of almost like it's not real. Like it's mm-hmm.
fantastical.
Yeah, it's so fantastical and so grand that it feels like stories. It doesn't feel like real life, but these are things that actually happen. So.
Mm. Right.
I love that you said yassification because I feel like this show is
could be called
Our Flag Means Death, the yassification of Steed Bonnet, the gentleman pirate.
It's more of a yassification of Blackbeard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
Steed in real life was not that far off.
No.
The Rice Darby Steed. This is Pirates of the Yassification. Pirates of the Yassification.
Like, Blackbeard's whole outfit.
Oh, Leather Daddy Blackbeard, you mean?
Yeah. I was telling Liz, I'm like, I just want to like bite into it. It's like so good.
Oh, good. I just love that Taika Waititi was like, I am going to play Blackbeard as a sensitive slut. And then he just runs with it. The entire show.
Taika is a gift. He can do no wrong in my book.
He must be protected at all times. He's a national treasure.
An international treasure. Yes. I just, one of my favorite MCU movies, which I talk about the MCU constantly, is Thor Ragnarok. And yes! It's just like the fun and creativity and flat out horniness that Taika brings into his work really, really works for me. Like he he has this aesthetic where like he meshes high art and like really cultured, really thoughtful gags with just complete absurdity.
Yeah. He is the slut we don't deserve, but the slut that we need right now. Yes!
Okay. So we're going to do just a quick overview about the show, and it's going to be mildly spoilery, and then we're going to get into the heavy spoilers territory. So if you haven't seen it, you can listen for a little bit longer. Honestly, like, I say this about everything, but we could spoil this whole thing and you should still go watch it.
Yeah, you could pause the episode, watch it, come back. Like, it's 10 episodes and each one's 30 minutes long. Like, yeah, take a day.
So
take
quick.
A day. Yes. Take okay. a day.
So it is based loosely, question mark, because it sounds, because I've read the Wikipedia page and it seems like all of this could have happened. It's based loosely on the life of Steed Bonnet, the gentleman pirate who abandoned his family so that he could captain a pirate ship called Revenge during the golden age of piracy, which I just learned was a thing. His crew is pretty much a ragtag group of queers on the high seas. They're all more experienced pirates than he is. But
that's not saying like a ton.
Which is not saying a lot.
The bar is very low.
There is a man on the crew who talks to birds. There's an assigned female at birth non-binary person who was raised by her nun Nana to kill for her family's revenge.
Yes.
And who initially poses as a man on the ship. There are a bunch of lovable con artists. There's a guy who looks like if Jerry from Parks and Rec got the super soldier serum. Like, I had to look up to make
sure.
You're
talking about Hodor.
Dude, that's Hodor, man.
Oh, not a Game of Thrones person.
That's okay.
He also had Khaleesi's like first husband or no, second husband. The one.
No, because first husband was Khal Drogo. Momoa, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So Joel Fry is her second husband, I think, from Marine. So we have
something
two
like that.
Game of Thrones people.
I just had a very panic thought of if Jason Momoa and Taika Waititi were in a project together, could I live?
No.
Could I survive that?
We would just I think we would all collectively have to like build a mass grave and just lay in it and just become one with the dirt.
Okay, also, it's quickly coming to me. It's gonna be like a Magic Mike 3.
Oh yeah.
I want them slutty dancing oiled up.
Magic Mike 3 Hawaiian Vacation. And ooh. Jason Momoa is a fire dancer, and Taika Waititi is like recently divorced and he's looking for a little R&R and gets a little J&M. Anyway, okay. Also quick fun aside, for those who don't know and for those who don't follow me, I actually live in Burbank. I came home one day and there was a gentleman getting into an Uber going to LAX. And he was a very large gentleman and he was a very recognizable gentleman. And I paused my car and I went, excuse me. And he looks over and he goes, are you an actor? And he was like, yeah. And I'm like, were you on Game of Thrones? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, are you Hodor? And he's like, yeah. So he apparently had been living next door to me for 6 months without me knowing at all. Oh. And I caught him as he was on the way to LAX and he gave me a picture and he is the biggest sweetheart. He's apparently like a tech DJ.
Yeah, yeah. UK,
and he is really, really sweet. And so I just wanted to like, I'm full of a bunch of like really weird LA stories because you live here long enough, you're gonna run into a celebrity. But yeah, Wee John lived across the street from me for 6 months and I had no idea. Those star tattoos on his face, by the way, those are real. I can confirm.
They might be because I'd seen a few pictures of him like at DJ gigs and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a big sweetheart, and he was very, very, the it's funny, his handler was definitely like, well, he's going to the airport, but he's like, no, I can take a picture. So he was very, very sweet. But that's my fun story. But yes, if you want to, I don't know where we left off.
I need
but
a handler.
Yeah, I always need to be handled.
Always. So gently, though.
Where we left off, we were talking about some of the crew. Steed mm-hmm. has this lavish ship that he gets. Initially, he tells his baby mama, like, hey, you, me, the young ones, let's go sail and have a great time. And she's like, no, I like our life here. I'm fine. You want to go be a pirate? Fucking go be a pirate. And then he does, in fact, go and be a pirate. He hires a crew, he pays them well, he tells them stories every night. He's just a lovely, engaged manager.
So sweet.
So sweet. Of course they decide
people
that they're
first
going to
management
mutiny.
Style.
We took it through as a crew.
Yes, he's very concerned about everyone's mental health and they need to process things out loud.
There's some art therapy with the flags, yeah. Which I love.
So they want a mutiny, but they get boarded by the Royal Navy. One of the officers is one of Steed's childhood bullies. Steed accidentally sort of murders him a little bit.
Ish, sort of.
Yeah. And that sets the tone for things to start getting bloodier and more piratey.
Sure. Yeah.
And they managed to take a couple of hostages during that Royal Navy skirmish. And Steed tries to sell them at the Republic of Pirates, which I think
man
should
for
be
sale.
Man for buy my booty.
Which leads to people thinking that he is a sex worker and that he is peddling his wares.
Yes.
I think Republic of Pirates would be a great name for a clothing store for cosplayers.
Oh, love that. Yeah.
You could get all your Ren Faire gear there.
Hell yeah.
Assorted fandoms, Dungeons and Dragons. I think there's a concept here. So Steve's antics draw the attention of the fearsome Blackbeard, played by Taika Waititi. And he first meets Steed as Steed is hanging for the crime of piracy and cuts him down. So Steed comes to, Steed has been stabbed. He has been nearly strangled to death and he's cut down. He looks into the eyes of a very attractive man with a luscious curly salt and pepper beard, long luscious locks, leather daddy outfit that you just yes. want to bite into.
Yes.
Like an angel sent from the
hell.
Pits of hell.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
the gentleman pirate.
Yeah.
Heard of me?
Oh, Blackbeard or Ed, he's intrigued Ed. By the gentleman pirate.
Ed.
After recovering from his injuries, he treats Blackbeard like an honored guest because they can learn a lot from each other. He can learn how to become a vicious pirate from Ed, and Ed can learn about the aristocracy. So they start hitting it off. They're fast friends, but Blackbeard secretly plans to just use Steed to learn about the aristocracy and then fake his death by killing Steed and then taking his place. But as charming killers in scripted television are wont to do, Ed falls for Steed and he can't go through with it. And it is a very slow burn friends to lovers romance. It's soft and squishy and tender. It's the grumpy sunshine, foppish dandy meets criminal stern brunch daddy of your dreams story. And now we're going to get into heavy spoilers. So pause, go finish watching the show and come back. But this ends in many cliffhangers.
It does.
And yes, they don't
and we
end
need a second
up together.
Season. No, we're just at the third act breakup. We're not yes. at the yeah, we're at the shit gets darker yeah. before the dawn.
It ends at the third act breakup, and the breakup happens because Steed is a little bitch is what happens. So tell me how you reacted to first the dark turn of you know, the renaissance of Blackbeard, of real bad Blackbeard.
So Meg, if you want to answer that first, because I'm going to answer it from a screenwriting perspective. So Meg, okay. If you just want to give your raw opinion first.
Sure. Yeah. So when he goes back to being evil, but still deeply sad and wounded, mm-hmm. Blackbeard, I think that my underwear disintegrated.
You don't know where it went.
It's just gone.
You were wearing underwear?
At point?
But I mean, like, oh my God, just like the whole shift from his like baby face. He's shaved. They share this tender kiss that I just want to like
softest. I have watched that kiss. I like five times a day. I'm kidding. Like I just go back and I rewatch it. But yes,
I've looked at a lot of fan art in the last day. So much fan art. I just want to like take that scene and like grind it up and snort it because I
rub it into your mouth.
So, but when he gives Lucius that look like from under his brow, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, okay, something is. You can tell immediately something has changed, and I would not be as like on board with it, except for that last scene that we see of him where he's like curled crying. Up tearful still, even though he's like in his bad Blackbeard regalia.
I was so grateful for the inclusion of that.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Because that felt for a show that's very dialed up to 11 mm-hmm. and surreal and like not grounded often. That was a realistic moment. Like mm-hmm. no one goes into their villain era and like that's the end of it, you know.
No,
like,
yeah,
all the dark sadness that motivated it is still there. Like you don't make a complete switch and like of your
as community. Campy and like over the top as all the characters were in as Blackbeard was, like the struggle that he's having is like intensely real and intensely mm-hmm. human, like telling C like I'm not a good person, that's why I don't have any friends,
yeah,
and then being like you are always gonna find out who I was, mm-hmm. it's like that feeling that a lot of us have, that's like if people truly knew me then they would reject me, mm-hmm. and so mm-hmm. then he feels like Steed does truly know him and accepts him, that's when they're gonna like run off together. But then the worst fear is realized and he was rejected. Mm-hmm. So like that deep, like, mm-hmm. My guts hurt.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It hurts so much.
And then he just goes into his MCR phase for a little bit. And then,
which I respect.
I 100% respect. So as a fan of the show, I concur with everything that you said. You know, it is the thing that I think really makes people gravitate towards this show and in practically overnight was that it is a soft show. Mm-hmm. It is a very soft, it's a very genuine, it's a very sincere expression of love and of, you know, being vulnerable in a way that we've never really seen, particularly in a genre piece, like a pirate piece. Mm-hmm. And I think because it is a comedy and because it becomes so ridiculous, they're able to get away with that.
Right.
As a screenwriter, I saw it coming. I hate to say that I saw it coming because it was in screenwriting, especially at the end of like a short season like this, mm-hmm. there was no way it was going to be that happily ever after.
Yeah.
I knew that something, and the minute that he was held up at gunpoint by the second British guy, the second badminton.
Yeah,
I was twin. Like, yeah. I could see it all happening. I knew it was all coming, but it didn't make it hurt any less.
Yeah.
Which is definitely why like this show definitely bears repeat watches. There are some shows like I like Bridgerton. I sat down and I binged the second season and mm-hmm. I binged the first season, but I don't really feel the need to go back and watch Bridgerton.
Yeah,
I can appreciate it, especially mm-hmm. like on a visual standpoint. I watched Our Flag Means Death with my friends And then I came home from San Diego and I sat my boyfriend down and we watched the whole thing again. And then I wrote a spec script because I really want to write in season two.
Putting it out there into the universe.
I am manifesting. It bears repeat watching. It is both a breakaway from the standard formula, and it is also incredibly familiar because the way that it's written, I'm going to say this in the best possible way, it is fan fiction. It is fan-driven fan fiction. It is done by people who love the material. It is done by people who understand the material, and I'll get into that when I get into the historical stuff. You can tell, especially when it comes to comedy, you can tell what cast and crew truly loves what they're doing and what cast and crew is there to pick up a paycheck. And the crew of Our Flag Means Death, both on screen and off, clearly have so much love and reverence for not only what they're creating, but for the source material. And it's very interesting because when you were describing the plot synopsis and being like, it's kind of loosely based off of that, but sort of not, it's very interesting. So, okay, I'm going to go into some of the historical stuff. I'm going to put out a big disclaimer though.
Okay.
When I talk about historical facts for piracy, for pirates, the Golden Age, pirates were not known for writing stuff down very often.
Not everyone has a Lucius.
So when I talk about something like a fact, a lot of it is conjecture and a lot of it is stuff that historians have cobbled together and sort of agreed on. Like, for example, the name Edward Teach, depending on what historian you're talking to, it'll either be Teach or Thatch. Like some things as simple as names we can't even agree on.
Right.
So this show is predicated on a real thing that happened. Blackbeard and Steed Bonnet did meet, and they didn't just meet, right? For whatever reason, because Steve Bonnet was not a good pirate. He was really bad at what he did. He just clearly wanted to like have an adventure and like have a cool ship and that sort of thing. So the Rhys Darby interpretation of Steve Bonnet is not that far off from the historical understanding of who the gentleman pirate was. But then you have Blackbeard, who is the most infamous pirate in history. When you think of pirates and you're not thinking of pop culture pirates, when you think of real pirates, you think of Blackbeard. He is synonymous with the idea of the Golden Age of piracy. But in reality, in history, he tutored Steed Bonnet. He actually was Steed's mentor. And it didn't take because he was still a bad pirate, but.
Which begs the question, why? Why did he not just take his ship? Because it seems like that's a thing that he would do.
And that's the interesting thing is that historically we've never really been able to agree. I say we, like I'm a fucking historian, but anyway, we've never been able to agree why this happened because it was not a passing fancy. It was not a ship's passing in the night. It was you're going to come on my ship. I'm going to teach you how to be a pirate and we're going to spend months together. So to reframe it and recontextualize it in a romantic context makes so much fucking sense.
Yes. Like how could it be anything else? Like that is immediately where my mind would go like, oh, they fucking.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And that's sort of the funny thing is that like, cause we know a decent amount about Steed Bonnet, because he was part of the gentry, he was part of the upper crust. So we have records about his family. We know nothing about Blackbeard. We have, it's generally agreed upon that he grew up impoverished and we know that he was English. There was a rumor that he had a family on land, but that's unsubstantiated. There are a couple of things about his, you know, the way he pirated that's generally agreed upon. Like for example, he ate gunpowder. He just would straight up put gunpowder in his drinks and in his food, and he just ate it He also had fuses that he put in his beard and he would light them when he was taking over ships because he knew that he needed to be scary in order to make it, you know, the quickest in and out possible. But as far as who he was as a man, we really don't know. So there is a lot of room to work with this. And I just tweeted something out. I was like, it is so revolutionary to depict a Blackbeard who is soft, who is tender, who is queer, who is in touch with his emotions, and who feels and who is vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Because in every other depiction of Blackbeard I've ever seen, both in the history books, on television, in movies, games, he is always Blackbeard. He is this big lumbering, you know, beast of a man. And so to give him these added aspects of being so vulnerable, in a way, I think humanizes him at an angle that no one else can really do. And mm-hmm. it's so revolutionary.
Even with what you're describing about the fuses in the beard, like, I'm not even trying to be funny, but that is some dramatic chaos by shit.
He was a campy motherfucker, let me tell you this. He was hella camp, and like, he knew it, because that's the thing. He was a very brilliant strategist. He knew what he was doing. He lasted until he was about 40 years old, which is unheard of if you're that big of a pirate. So he was a brilliant, brilliant sailor and brilliant tactician. So he knew how to make an entrance. Mm. And if that doesn't scream theater kid, I don't know what the fuck does.
That's the vibe.
The fuckery.
It's the fuckery.
Yeah.
It's the fuckery.
So I wanted to say one more thing before we get into secondary characters that we liked and then the history. What you were saying about the vulnerability that this show portrays, one of the moments that really stood out to me was when Steed reconciles with his wife, Mary, who yes. has moved on as a widow. And
love that for Mary.
Mm-hmm. Love that for her.
She was living her best life. She became a painter. She took up with her painting instructor. Mm-hmm. She became friends with a bunch of widows. And she was about to murder
him. I mean, but that's how we say I love you in Our Flag Means Death. It's like, yeah. did you almost murder someone? Oh, then you're good.
Yeah. He wakes up and they have this conversation, and they're just two people who have love for each other, genuine love for each other, want each other to be okay, but they realize that they are not it for each other, and they're able to move on separately because they care about each other. And when she asks, oh, what's her name? Because clearly Steed has fallen for someone. He says, Ed. His name is Ed. And she gives him this big hug. Like, he just revealed something so beautiful and sacred and precious about himself. And she's honored that she was there. And it was just,
can we talk about Mary for a second?
Yes.
Because it would have been so easy to make her this horrible spinster, like mm-hmm. angry, you know, here's a woman just slighted. Just a shrew. Yeah. And obviously she's pissed because she was put into this marriage she didn't want, and then her husband left, and so like there's obviously resentment there. But when they have that moment of platonic love and understanding, and when they really come to terms, like, she is so supportive and so gracious. And it's this show explores love in a way that is not just romantic. Mm-hmm. It explores love between friends. It explores love within family. It explores, you know, past love, new love. There are so many dynamics. It's such a short show, especially mm-hmm. with it only being the first season, but it is so intricate in the character relationships and how they bounce off of each other. Mm-hmm. I love what they did with Mary. It could have been so easy to make you hate her, and you don't hate her.
It doesn't disrespect any of its characters. Even the guy who is running around naked and who talks to birds.
Buttons!
The weirdest character on the show, they still, his bird gets killed and the entire crew is like, no, fuck you. You need to get off this ship right now because you hurt Button's bird.
Yeah.
And he's taken seriously for that. So
poor Carl.
That's a good poor Carl.
What's the name of his wife he left behind?
Oh, Olivia.
It was Olivia. Yes.
Yes. So let's get into, that's a great way to transition to talking about favorite secondary characters. So Meg, who really stood out for you?
I mean, I want more Jim. More Jim.
You want Jim in your pants.
I do want Jim in my pants. I do.
That is a fair.
I want to know. We learned some backstory, but I still want to know more, and I want to see more of the tenderness between Jim and
Olu.
Olu. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Coming, Nana.
I just loved their like repartee, and
they're so cute.
Yeah, they're so
fucking cute.
Yeah.
And jumping off of that, by the way, because Olu is, you know, Olu's a big old boy, and there are some big old actors on this show. Mm-hmm. Not a single fat joke. Not one.
Yeah.
Liz, going back to what you said about respecting the characters, like there are gay jokes, but gay jokes in the sense of like, these are jokes that gays tell about each other to each other.
Yeah.
And there is not a single, there's Fang, who's a big old boy. There's Black Pete, who I love, but let's be honest, he's not the most good looking. There's Olu, who's, there are fat characters and no one says a word. No one says a word because it's not necessary.
There was a fat joke made early on, but it was about a thin character. So Steed.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay. So, okay. All right. Fair enough. But that
so
was
it's like not, but like... but that but it was so like ridiculous to make a joke about Steed, who is clearly a slender man, that I feel like it doesn't even count. Like it was put in there for absurdity.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
My favorite joke, I think, of the whole thing is, so Black Pete and Lucius have just gotten together for the first time, and Izzy is coming in and breaking it up. He's like, you think you're cute, don't you? He's like, actually, no, I think I'm just so-so, but I've decided I'm going to carry myself like I'm cute.
I want that confidence. I want that confidence in every fucking day of my life.
So Lucius and Black Pete are the ones who get together, right?
Yes.
Correct. Black Pete, who is a white guy, we should say.
Correct. Correct. But he insists that he's Black Pete because he tells everyone that he was Blackbeard's original right-hand man.
And Blackbeard's like, I've never seen this man.
I've never met this more before in my life.
Sorry to this man.
Also, at one point, Fang calls him Brown Pete, which is kind of hilarious.
But I also love watching their relationship kind of blossom too toward the end when Lucius is like hiding Steed's journal under her shirt. He's like, hey, is your tummy hurting? Like, I was like, oh, it's so nice.
I love the moment where Black Pete is like, you know, I've faced a lot of death. I just haven't faced
your death.
Yeah.
Oh, so sweet. So sweet. I actually, if you don't mind, Lucius is my favorite secondary
character. He's great.
He's so good. And like, he's definitely, again, going back to the themes of like, it could have been so easy for this to be another like, haha, look at the queer people show, but it's not. It's done with so much love. And Lucius is the embodiment of that character because he's camp. He wears a like a neckerchief and he's like swaying all the time, and he's like, he literally, like, there's a scene where he has accidentally seen Jim without their prosthetics. And he's like, you have to understand how much I didn't see. Jim like tackles him and they're about to like stab him in the face. He's like, no, I'm perfect at keeping secrets. My mom thought I locked girls for years. And it's so, he so could have easily just been the gay one. Mm-hmm. But first of all, he'd have to like fight for that title in a crew full of the gay ones. But also like he is intelligent. He's witty. He is like really funny. All of the best, some of the best lines go to him. He's also very emotionally sensitive in a way of like, he is aware that Blackbeard and Steed are in love before they are aware like, that they are in love.
This is happening.
That whole conversation, by the way, of Blackbeard's bar and grill and other delicacies and fishing equipment and the gift shop in the back. That whole conversation was improv. That was just Rhys D'Arby and Taika Waititi, like just shooting the, you know, and I've watched that scene a couple of times. And wondering like, because I like to kind of dissect it from like a technical standpoint. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, so this is clearly a riff. I wonder, because a lot of times when you're improvising in a scripted show, you'll have a nugget of an idea and take after take, you start building on it. So as I'm watching the scene, I'm like, okay, which take was this? Was this a later take? Something like that. The reverse shots, is that, you know, is that being ADR'd from like a previous take? So it's very interesting to pick out what's improv'd and like take it apart from a technical standpoint. But yeah, he's Lucius is definitely my favorite. So I mentioned earlier that I'm a screenwriter and I wrote a spec script for this show. So a spec script, for those who do not know, is essentially professional fan fiction.
Yeah.
You write a script as if you were part of the writing staff of a show. It helps you, a lot of like writing contests expect spec scripts. When you go to school for writing, you're taught how to write a spec script. So I literally watched the show twice and sat down and wrote episode 11. message me on Twitter.
Okay.
But there's I have a Lucius and Black Pete reunion scene, which I will not go into here, but I would put money on the fact that Lucius is not dead.
He's alive.
There's no way he is dead. There has just been an insane push to renew this show. I will be shocked if it doesn't get a renewal, because it is raking in the numbers like crazy.
So the show was created by David Jenkins, and that's a name that I hadn't heard before. Is Taika the executive producer on it?
So from what I understand, David Jenkins is the showrunner and the creator. A lot of times, you know, television is very, more so than movies, television is very collaborative. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times episodes will have different directors. Taika is the big name behind it. Yeah. So he probably bankrolled a lot of it. But Taika is one of those people who is both a creative and an executive. So he falls in the middle. So he was probably able to grease the wheel. So
yeah,
David Jenkins, definitely this is his show, but Taika, especially because he stars in it, he has definitely become the face of the show, and probably the reason why it was made.
Yeah, definitely. I assume that Taika had created the show until I looked it up. So it makes sense that he probably bankrolled a lot of it. So yeah, I agree with you that there's no way that Lucius is dead. No, it just doesn't seem like that kind of show. And it seems like a show where someone very much could come back from the dead.
I mean, historically speaking, Calico Jack Rackham did not die from a rogue cannonball. So
let's talk about Calico Jack, because I had two standout performances. I had one that was a secondary character that I loved, and one that I could not stand but loved everything that they did, if that makes sense. So my standout character was Spanish Jackie, played by Leslie Jones,
who is impeccable.
Yeah.
Is not from Spain and does not speak Spanish, but she is a, like you said, pirate queen with 19, now 18 husbands. Previously, it had been 20 husbands. She runs a dive bar. She doesn't want to open up a restaurant because she already has enough overhead. She has enough mouths to feed. She doesn't want to deal with wait staff. she's a businesswoman. She knows how to be charming and she knows how to be ruthless. She collects people's noses in jars. She really cares about her nose jar. She like everyone in this show gives big queer energy, especially in her interactions with Jim.
Oh yeah.
And I love Leslie Jones, and she deserves to have room to play. So I like seeing her in something that I hadn't seen before, where she gets to be really, really broad.
She's casted so wonderfully. Everyone is casted perfectly. But like when that camera panned over and I saw Leslie Jones in that long ass wig in that red velvet coat with a wooden hand smoking a fucking, what are those mini cigars?
A cigarillo.
Smoking a cigarillo. I was like, yes, yes.
And she has this whole group of men who just serve at her pleasure. Amazing.
Give it more.
So the other character who I couldn't stand as a human being, but was glad for everything that they caused, was Calico Jack, played by Will Arnett. Yep. And I understood so much this idea of you are dating someone and you really like them, and then their scumbag friend from out of town comes to visit and you see this whole
slash X
in this case comes to visit and you see this whole other side of them that is appalling and you are trying to reconcile, and then you might have like the little gripey moments where it's like, oh well, like the Blackbeard I used to know. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, you're the old bitch, I'm the new bitch. The situations are different.
Yeah.
He may have pulled that shit with you, but I have him trained, see?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of a rivalry with Calico Jack and Steed, and Ed ultimately lets Calico Jack lure him away from Steed, not because he gives a shit about this guy, but because he feels like he owes him one, and because he thinks Steed would be better off. And it just leads to all of the terrible things that happen in the last few episodes that ultimately bring them together and then separate them.
I did want to talk about Calico Jack for a little bit, because he, in my opinion, so here's the list of people in the show who existed.
Okay.
Blackbeard, Steed Bonnet, Izzy Hands, Calico Jack, and I believe that's it. Those are it. There's about four characters who truly did exist. And Calico Jack was actually the least accurate of the four. So he was named Calico Jack because he was very flamboyant and he wore a lot of colorful cottons. He liked to wear really fine things and he liked to wear a lot of colors and things like that. He also was known for, and this folds in nicely into the actual accurate representation of what a pirate crew looked like in the 18th century, is he hired women and non-gender conforming people. He sailed with Anne Bonny and Mary Read, two of the most infamous like female pirates in history. The Jack in the show, Calico Jack in the show, is literally, we joked about him being like a cowboy on the open water. And that was absolutely deliberate, because in every aspect, in his clothing choices, in his mannerisms, in his facial hair, he does not belong. He does not belong in Blackbeard's life. He doesn't belong in Steve's life. He is a puzzle piece that no longer has a space. Mm-hmm. And that is communicated through every aspect of that character. Mm-hmm. So while I am a little like pirate history nerd being like, that's not Calico Jack, in my screenwriting yeah. head is like, okay, but for what they needed to
it
be,
makes sense.
It makes sense. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually, again, going back to my projects, I have a passion project since 2017, which is the story of Mary Read and Bonnie and Jack Rackham. And so there's a website called Inktip for screenwriters where you can essentially make scripts live for executive producers and stuff to like look through and directors to look through. And I updated my pirate script, which is called Ladies of Fortune. And I put it on, I re-uploaded it on Inktip, made it live. And I got a download that day because I knew that Our Flag Means Death is kind of a turning point for pirate genre. Mm-hmm. Like Black Sails sort of made a splash, mm-hmm. no pun intended, but not really. But it's, and for my purposes, like I definitely have an ultimatum. I have ulterior motives with this show.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think that one of the reasons that we were really excited to talk to you about, and that we spent so much time talking about the show and sprinkling in the history, is that you know a lot about the hidden queer history Absolutely. Of things. And I would not have guessed, although it makes sense, that a bunch of pirates would be queer and non-gender conforming and mm-hmm. from different ethnic backgrounds who couldn't make it in society. So was this like weirdly accurate?
That's the thing. It kind of was. So first of all, on like I mentioned earlier that the way I phrased it, the Golden Age of piracy is actually not that long of a time period. It's about 1715 to maybe 1720 if we're talking about the real Golden Age. So it's like that's another thing it has in common with Westerns. Like the Western as we know it is that really brief moment of time post Civil War to the beginning of the industrial, like the 1900s, mm-hmm. turn of the century. So it's a very short period of time. And in that short period of time, there was just it's this radical overlay of all of the morals and ethics of the old world, including the identity of who had power. So mm-hmm. for example, most of the Golden Age takes place physically within the Caribbean.
Right.
About 80% of pirates during the Golden Age were people of color. They were people of Jamaican descent, African descent, Haitian descent. They were people who were recently freed. They mm-hmm. were people who were always freed. They were, you know, and that actually bleeds into the iconography of the Golden Age. So everybody knows what a Jolly Roger is. They're a real thing. Every major pirate ship had their own flag. The use of skulls, first of all, it's scary, but the use of skulls and skeletons has roots in Haitian and Jamaican, like hoodoo voodoo, mm-hmm. and religions and things like that. Also religions coming from Africa. Also, as far as the queerness goes, we're going to go back to Anne Bonny and Mary Read because those two are my favorites. So Anne Bonny was the quartermaster for Jack Rackham on another ship called the Revenge. It was originally called the Kingston. So there are a lot of
names.
It was a very popular name. So
everyone had a grudge.
Everybody had a revenge. So Anne Bonny was the quartermaster for the Revenge on Jack Rackham's vessel. And she was very, very like, I am woman, hear me roar. She would actually open her tunic and expose her breasts to fight because number one, it distracted her enemies. And number two, she wanted them to know that they were being killed by a woman.
So just like titties flopping titties around.
Out. Titties like out, guns blazing.
So that you get all the bits there yeah. that are stabbable.
Mm, yeah.
That's bold.
It's incredibly
bold.
Putting
all your stabbable bits out there.
But it worked. Now, compared to Mary Read, who was her very, very close friend, perhaps something more, for a very
her roommate. For a few years.
Oh my God, they were roommates. Now, conversely.
Did they listen to Girl in Red?
Oh my God. They're roommates. Now, conversely, Mary Read, very famously, dressed as a man.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you talk to a bunch of like old white male historians, oh, it was much easier for women to dress as men to be sailors because it was safer. It's like, bitch, Mary Anne Bonny has her whole ass titties out. Why the fuck would Mary Read feel the need to disguise herself? Mm-hmm. I'm using her pronouns because that's just how she was referred to, but I am of the belief that Mary Read is gender queer or mm-hmm. or gender fluid or some kind of demigirl something, mm-hmm. because there is no fucking reason why a cis woman would dress as a man by choice for no fucking reason.
Yeah.
And her bestie is like booby out, like skewering people. Now, interestingly, the history of queer piracy, as I mentioned, there's not a lot of documentation when it comes to pirates, mm-hmm. but there is a publication that was it was released around 1724. The author used a pen name, so we don't know who he is, mm-hmm. and it's called A General History of the Pirates with a mm-hmm. Y, and it was essentially the prototype for what we would consider to be the pop culture pirate. Mm-hmm. It was this guy who lived on all these ships, and he was essentially Lucius. Like, he would take notes of all these things, but then he would embellish to not only make the crown appear, it was essentially kind of propaganda as well. Mm-hmm. It would make King George and the crown seem very virtuous and very moral and very pious in compared to these pirates. Sure. And a big sticking point was the rampant queerness in pirate ships. So here's where it gets interesting. So the publication of A General History of Pirates is considered to be propaganda, mm-hmm. and gay relationships in the publication were considered to be slander. However, there is also discourse about how much of that is genuine and how much of that is propaganda. We know that there were pirate marriages. We know that like ceremonies were held. And even though there were female pirates, like, they were still a minority. So I'm just saying. Mm-hmm. But in addition to that, publication came out, A General History of Pirates. All right, I'm about some of the other like misconceptions that mm-hmm. that publication sort of spearheaded.
Yeah. Okay.
One is burying treasure. Another uh-huh. is walking the plank. Now, these two things, according to this pamphlet, did happen. But if they did, they happened once a piece. For the burying treasure, this happened with a guy named Captain Kidd, who I'm sure you've heard of.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Captain Kidd was essentially being pursued by the English. And so he took a select number of people to bury his take on an island, and then he killed everybody. And no one has been able to find the treasure since. So that actually happened, but that's it.
Huh.
Walking the plank was a thing that happened, but it didn't happen during the Golden Age. It was a fabrication of the publication, and then mm-hmm. later the book Treasure Island took inspiration from that and mm-hmm. made a walking the plank scene. And then in the 1800s, those pirates, I think one of them made someone walk the plank. Mm-hmm. So it eventually did happen, but like 100 years later, based mm-hmm. on, like, I saw it in a book, essentially. Yeah. I don't know how that works.
Propaganda inspired fiction, and fiction inspired real life.
Life imitates art. I mean, it's insane. I can also list off some rapid fire, very interesting pirates that not mm-hmm. a lot of people know about. The most financially successful pirate of all time. She lived in the 1800s. So she was about 100 years later. Her name was Ching Shi, and she was a Chinese sex worker that a pirate lord fell in love with her. He had about 30 ships or so in his fleet and wanted to marry. And she said, sure. give me half your shit. He agreed. They got married. He died mysteriously.
And murder then is a natural cause.
Murder is a natural cause. And she took his 30 ships, turned it into 300, and was such a problem for the Chinese government that they paid her to retire. Yes.
Fucking an icon.
Gaslight gatekeep girl boss. Let me tell you. There was also the Lioness of Brittany, who was a French pirate, and she was married to a French naval officer who got his head cut off. And she said, okay, I'm burning all y'all. And then she did. There was also the grandmother of all piracy was in the 1600s. So 100 years earlier, her name was Grace O'Malley. She was the heiress to an Irish shipping company, and she turned it into a smuggling ring, and she essentially laid out the prototype for what we would consider to be the classic pirate. So there's a lot of really cool pirates out there. If anyone is interested, like, you're gonna have to dig, no pun intended, but it's a very interesting time. It's a lot more diverse than Hollywood and the pop culture pirates would have you believe. And I think in a very weird way, and I think it's because it was a comedy that they were able to stretch their legs like this, but Our Flag Means Death has accuracies to the historical makeup of a pirate crew that you don't see in a lot of other pirate media. So
does the crew of the Revenge meet any of these little known female pirates in your spec script, in your wildest dreams?
So Steed, okay. So Blackbeard.
Or in real life, yeah.
Okay. So I don't know about real life. In the spec script, no. The spec script is more like the episode that takes place immediately after would we like a treat? Would we like a treat? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Always. So I have a show that has teasers. It's that little opening scene before the title card. It's also sometimes considered a button, although those are usually referred to for like the end. I went through and I was like, I don't have a teaser. I don't have a cold open. And I came up with a little single page cold open that both establishes the fact that Blackbeard in season 2 would be getting a new crew. But also I think would set the tone for the rest of my spec script. And if you guys would like, I can read it to you.
Yes.
As a final send-off treat. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So this is the teaser for our Flag Means Death spec script. This would be essentially episode 1, season 2. And we begin the exterior of Spanish Jackie's bar in the daytime. A line of grubby pirates mill about outside the door. On the outside wall hangs a poster. It reads, "Crew sign up today." Pirate prelap, which means he's speaking over in a different room. Why am I a good fit? Cut to interior Spanish Jackie's bar, continuous. In a dimly lit back room, a lone pirate stands under a skylight. He's gruesome and harried, with rotted teeth and a blind eye. Pirate continued. When I was 9, I pushed me brother into a roaring fire, laughed as I watched his ruddy face melt off. At birth, me own mother gave me up, as she feared I was the spawn of the devil himself. The last man who disrespected me, I shoved me hand up his ass and made him talk like a fucking puppet. And most importantly, I make a damn fine coffee. Izzy Hands leans forward on a table from the darkness. He holds a quill pen and an opened registry book. Izzy, you're hired. Teaser end, title card. Yes. Hire me, David!
That was wonderful.
Incredible.
I loved it.
Amazing vocal performance.
Thank you.
David, thank you. Really, I was there.
A really good Izzy Hands.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're hired. He has an incredibly distinctive voice.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Menacing, but also like an old man on his dying breath,
which
for everything he says.
Fun fact, the real Israel Hance was 16 when Blackbeard died. So, yeah.
Liberties were taken.
Liberties were taken, and I am thankful that they were, because the direction for Izzy Blackbeard is my daddy Hands is not a direction I would want a 16-year-old to take.
Ruthie, thank you so much for being on, for encouraging us to watch this show and bringing it into our lives, because I saw the chatter about it, but I don't know that I would have gotten around to it if not for you.
Yes, it is. It is worth it so much.
Tell everyone where they can find you.
Excellent. So if you want to find my Twitter, I am at all lowercase letters, RUTHIEWRITES 91. So Ruthie Writes 91. My pinned tweet has my books. I have a more than the Railwalkers. I have a bisexual erotica mobster book that I wrote in 7 months. And I have a kind of a low stakes queer book and its sequel about an action star who's closeted with who falls in love with his number one fan. It's a little softer, a little gentler.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
You can find them all on Amazon. You can find them all on my pinned tweet. And I also have a website where I have a bunch of script IP. So if you're interested to see what I'm working on now, I also have a page for a new book that I'm working on, which is A Dip into High Fantasy. Inspired by Dungeons and Dragons. It's inspired by a lot of tabletop role-playing games.
The so range.
I get really bored very easily. So
we will have all of Ruth's links in the show notes. Ruth Hansen, everybody, it was a pleasure.
Thank you for having me on. I had a great time. Thank you, guys.
We'll also have all of our links in the show notes. And until next episode, air kisses.